Yeah.
Well, my clock shows 2:30. So we will go ahead and call the meeting to order. Everybody could please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I didn't do anything. I just said one blank.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And Lynn, if you could do a roll call for us.
Trustee Davis?
Here.
Trustee Doherty?
Here.
Trustee Dye?
Here.
Trustee Freckleton?
Here.
Trustee Haas?
Here.
Trustee Holness?
Here.
Trustee Howard?
Here.
Trustee Lloyd?
Here.
Trustee Lubai?
Here.
No requests for public participation.
Okay, with that, we will move to the public hearing of policies.
Hey, buddy.
Okay. Good afternoon, Board. Thank you for reviewing all these policies. This is the major requirement and your major involvement in the SACS process. There are not a lot of changes, but for the record, we're going to go through at least those and just say no changes. We can adopt these collectively at the end, unless you want to do it individually. Also, almost every department at the college has been involved in these. So, lost count of the number of people, and want to thank Karen and Carla for guiding us through the herding all the cats. Are you ready, Lynn? That's all right.
And Brian, I'm very comfortable. We'll do one motion at the end, so just go through your whole list, and we'll do a collective motion at the end as you recommended.
I could not hear you.
So we will do a collective motion like you recommended. It's a great idea.
Otherwise, I'll sound like an auctioneer. If it's technical, I can help you. Okay, section 1.01, there are no changes. Section 1.02, no changes. 1.03, there is one change on page 8 of the board agenda, changing 180 days to 178 to 182 for the duty days and for instructional personnel. Because some years we have different number of days. Section 2.10, there is a change that is on page 18 and it just uses the word dual enrollment. The next page on 19 changes the words to general education and developmental education. On page 26, section 48 was added in the statutes around 2017 regarding purchasing agreements and doing those with those ones you call piggybacking off other ones. We've been doing that for probably 15, 20 years anyway, but now that the statute has added it. 2.02, Page 29, they again change the words to dual enrollment. Page 203, no changes. Policy 2.04, there are quite a few changes in here. Most of these are changes are deletions, and there are things we just do not need, and it provides more flexibility. Page 2.5 is on your appointments, and it was again a statutory change from not less than 8 to not more than 9. 2.06, no changes. Section 3, 3.01, no changes. 3.02, no changes. 3.03, no changes. 3.04, no changes. 3.05, no changes. 3.06, no changes. 3.08, 3.09, 3.10, there are no changes. 3.11, there's a change on page 62 of the agenda, and that's just the name change. Page 67 of 3.14 is a requirement to make it plural. This is a change in the federal regulations on Title IX. Section 4, 4.01, no changes. 4.02, no changes. 4.03, no changes. 4.04, no changes. 4.05, there are a lot of changes regarding the Gordon rule, which I don't think they don't use that anymore. So we added the language from the state board rules, Florida state board rules of administrative rules. 4.06, no changes. 4.07, no changes. Going too fast, man, or is it too late? Okay, 4.08, there are changes on page 78 of the agenda. Textbook affordability. 8.07, and this changes to the naming of the building. Any naming still requires approval of the Board of Trustees. And the next time we'll be bringing policies 6 through 8 to the board.
So can I have a motion to accept the changes?
So moved.
Second.
A motion and a second. Any discussion or questions? Gary?
Just a question for Brian. In your estimation, Brian, obviously a lot of this was language modifications and things of that nature, it seemed like. But anything that, in your estimation, from a legal perspective, as I read through it, I didn't see anything really significant in changes.
I wouldn't know. There are no significant changes. A lot of the changes are more a court comes out with a ruling, and we can't change the policy. It won't matter. We just have to comply
right
with how they do it. And we do those each year. Like you saw one on Campus Free Expression Act.
Mm-hmm.
That was a court ruling, so we brought that board. So y'all go through these and make the major changes. This is just one where collectively we have to do all of them. I wouldn't say any of the first four are major.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't think so, but I always liked the legal opinion.
Too. We paid attention to the textbook affordability section.
Any other questions or discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? The motion passes.
Thank you.
Next is the consent agenda. Does anybody have an exception to the consent agenda?
Move approval.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Consent agenda passes. I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Lobasso now. Just a quick few words before I do so. As a board, I thought it was important to learn a little bit about our law enforcement academy today. There's been a lot of attention on law enforcement in general, on our academy, in the media. And I felt as a board we had a responsibility to make sure we understood what a great program it is, all the things they're doing to make sure they produce outstanding graduates to serve the communities around here. And I believe they truly are doing that. But again, as a board, I thought we should all take a look at a little bit about the program. So Tom, over to you.
Thank you. And yes, just our opportunity here to present to you our program with the information on how it works and the different criteria within there. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Dr. Amy Locklear to give the presentation on our Basic Law Enforcement Academy.
It is on. Thank you, though. Thank you, Lynn. Good afternoon, everyone. It's my pleasure to give a little overview of Daytona State's Basic Law Enforcement Academy. If you have questions at the end, I'll do my best to answer them, but we also have the director of the School of Emergency Management, Jessica Paul, and Dr. Colin Chesley, the AVP for the College of Health and Public Services. The School of Emergency Services also houses it's the Law Enforcement Academy as well as firefighting in the EMS program. So I'll start with basic law enforcement training in Florida. It is governed by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, FDLE, per statute. But the body that oversees the schools is the Criminal Justice Standards and Training Commission, or CJSTC, which is a 19-member panel appointed by the governor to fix four-year terms that does several things. One, they develop the curriculum that all law enforcement academies in Florida follow. They certify training schools so that we may operate as a certified training facility, and they certify the instructors that teach in the academy. Right now, there are 40 training centers in Florida. 28 of them are either at state colleges or technical colleges. There are a few that are run by the state itself. Florida Fish and Wildlife runs one. Florida Highway Patrol runs their own. There are some run by large police departments, like in Miami-Dade, and there are a few run by sheriff's departments and two by school districts. But most of them are run by the state college system. The curriculum is 770 hours. That takes students going full-time, 8 to 5, about 20 weeks to finish. This curriculum is very standard. It's very detailed. Everyone uses the same textbook. The textbook is divided into chapters, and then I've given just a little example here of the detail in which the learning objectives are laid out. After a series of learning objectives, they'll say, these are the mandatory exercises that you do in class, and then there's a few optional ones. So everyone is following the same structure in Florida. The state certification exam is required for employment. This is a 200-question exam, takes about 3 hours to take. You have to score an 80% or better. You can take it up to 3 times. If you fail it after 3 times, you have to repeat a basic law enforcement academy. The curriculum is divided into 18 courses. I've given you a few examples: firearms, defensive tactics, physical fitness, law enforcement in a diverse world, criminal investigations. They're taught in several ways. Lecture, which is like a typical classroom taking notes. Communication exercises, which are short exercises where students work through a problem such as de-escalation. You have demonstrations where the instructor gets up and shows the student what happens in a certain situation, say a traffic stop or an arrest. And then the scenarios where students are put in a role-playing exercise to try it out for themselves. De-escalation is not a chapter in the book, but it is woven throughout the curriculum, particularly in the communication exercises. So I read a passage from the book that talked about how important de-escalation was in starting the conversation with a member of the public that you are addressing. Some topics on the list are optional. So the CJSTC tells us, here's a list of all the things, for example, in defensive tactics that you may teach. They'll mark the ones that are mandatory, and the rest are up to the schools. One that we do not teach is something called the vascular neck restraint or the choke hold, and we haven't taught it in a very long time, if ever. And that was a decision made by local agencies that came to the college a long time ago and said, we don't want this to be in the curriculum. So it has not been. So let's turn to our academy. We've been a training site since the 70s. Under the current certification structure, we've been certified as a training facility since 1990. We award the vocational certificate in law enforcement once students complete the academy. But students can then use that vocational certificate to earn 27 credits in the Associate of Science in Criminal Justice. BLE is our shorthand for basic law enforcement. That's what we tend to call it. So once you've finished the vocational certificate, which is not really a transferable degree or credential, but you can transfer it essentially into the AS in Criminal Justice, and then from that AS you can enter a bachelor's degree. We run 6 academies a year, about 30 students each. That's really the ideal number. Our full-time cohorts begin in January, March, May, August, and October, and then we run one part-time night class that begins in March and takes 9 months. The regular cohorts take 20 weeks. Using our last certified amount of data, we have 98 graduates a year, and that's typical. It's about 100 each year. The exam pass rate for 2020, we have some fresh data from the state, is 84%. That's on the first try. Students, again, may take it on the second try and a third try, but the first rate pass rate is 84%. Placement rate is something we draw from a state-run database known as FETPIP that tracks people that are placed in Florida. So right now we are at 82% placement rate for the graduates. And please, if there's any questions as we go along, feel free to interrupt me. How do we select the students? Because this is a limited access program. You can't just sign up. All the applicants must meet certain criteria. They must pass the basic abilities test, which is a test of reading comprehension and computational skills. It's a lot like the TABE, if you're familiar with that. They have to pass an FDLE and an FBI background check. They cannot have had a felony conviction or a misdemeanor involving perjury or false statement. And they cannot have a dishonorable discharge from the military. There's also another list, U.S. citizen, 19 years old upon graduation, et cetera. But these are sort of the big ones here. Come on. There we go. The statute sets out the minimum qualifications to be a law enforcement officer in Florida, and our students must all meet those criteria. So you cannot enter the program unless you meet the qualifications in Florida to become an officer. We've added a little more screening to now bring a list of applicants for a new class to our advisory committee, which is made up of 21 chiefs of local agencies, both county and city. So we want to add a little extra layer there of scrutiny. Financial aid. The program is financial aid eligible. It's Bright Futures eligible. Our foundation has 8 different scholarship funds of varying amounts that are available for students, plus some general scholarships not specifically for law enforcement. And about 37 recruits a year are sponsored by a local agency, meaning they have paid their way, full cost, to come through the program. The most common sponsor is the Daytona Beach Police Department, which sponsors about a third of those that come through. I'm having trouble with this thing. I'm cranky. Instruction. The courses are taught at the ATC. That's the lecture and the defensive tactics room. If you've ever been through the ATC and gotten a tour, you'll see it as the big pads on the floor. This is where they learn the physical side of policing. It's also taught at the Sheriff's Office Training Center. We sort of generally refer to it as Tiger Bay. It's out on 92 off of Tiger Bay Road. And then there is a driving track off of 44 that's also owned by the county where we teach the driving skills. There is a director, which is Jessica Paul, 5 full-time faculty, and 60 part-time faculty. A little different than most of our other programs, these adjuncts or part-time faculty may only teach a 2-hour segment of the course, a specific type of technique, for example. They're specialists in, for example, DUI that will come in and teach a short segment, and then others will teach a longer portion of a course. So not all 60 teach at one time, but that's who's in the pool. All of the instructors that we have are certified by the CJSTC. They undergo a background check either with us or at their agency, so we do accept the agency's background check on their own folks. They get cleared for employment by their agency, so their agency knows they're working for us part-time and gives them a clearance letter. We are now going to a new practice of having their chief endorse them for this position. Oversight. So how is this program overseen? For one thing, I would say from my position, looking at all the programs we have, outside of nursing, this is probably the most regulated program that we have. Every hour that a student spends in class is documented. So it will say, John Doe took 4 hours of court procedure on this date signed by the instructor. Every day and every hour of the program is documented. It is audited annually by the CJSTC. Last time we were audited was 18-19, and because it was a perfect audit, the prize is you get to skip the next year. So we got to skip 19-20, we'll be audited again this coming year. I wanted to include a photo of our meritorious award from that organization after our last audit. This is where they just come in and look at all the records, everything we do, all these student records, certifications of instructors, et cetera. There's also an advisory board that I mentioned before. It's 21 chiefs from area agencies. They meet once a month to discuss training needs. And then what we're doing now is bringing them a list of all applicants. So for the March cohort, they've already reviewed and approved the applicant list for our next cohort. We do quite a bit of internal assessment at Daytona State. This is run by our Office of Institutional Effectiveness. So the full faculty review once a year all the data from their program in terms of their student success numbers and talk about what they could do that would better the program. And then FDLE conducts a customer survey twice every 5 years of all the agencies in the region that serve us. And I'm just gonna share a few data points. I know this is a little hard to see the details, but on the left here are the names of the organizations that filled out the survey. And across the top are the questions. Dark green indicates strongly agree. Light green indicates agree. The tan color is no opinion. Red means disagree or strongly disagree. And gray means they didn't answer that question. So I'll just scroll through. And as you can see, the results were all pretty good. Lastly, I wanted to just tell you about a few of the new things we're doing in the program. We started a new initiative called Conversations with Police, which is where a community moderator comes in and leads a discussion between students and working officers about community attitudes towards police, how to address those, and how to better communicate with citizens in their role that they're going to be taking on as officers. The virtual TI lab simulator is a virtual reality environment where students are put in real situations and where they have to make a decision. It could be something as dramatic as whether to pull a weapon, or it could be something like dealing with a person that has mental health issues and how to talk to them in real time. The instructors can manipulate what's happening to the student, then afterwards they can review it and see where they made mistakes. And it lets the students get out there and try some different scenarios without fear of messing up, so that when they get to the real scenarios, they have a little more confidence. The new uniform standard we're using will have a full gun belt, which lets the students get used to the weight of the weapon and all the other tools, because there's quite a few that they carry on their belt, and the use of body-worn cameras. So this means when they graduate with us, they'll go out and already have that experience. They talk in training about muscle memory, that when you learn with the full belt on, when you're out there doing it for the first time, you're already used to that environment. And lastly, we are implementing a program called Active Bystander for Law Enforcement. And this is a new national program. You can read about it online. that is a peer intervention program where officers learn how to intervene if one of their own colleagues is making a mistake in the field and how to learn how to do that and recognize that. So those are some of the new things that we have coming. We're very proud of the program, and I'll be glad to answer any questions or refer to my colleagues.
Before we have questions, great presentation. It's
thank you.
Hard to argue with a perfect audit and feedback from the other departments, but yet you're still implementing some changes, so that's great. You know, if you look at all the communities around here, it seems to me there's always a shortage of law enforcement officers, so obviously a very needed program, and I, for one, am very thankful for everyone you graduate. So I open it up to my fellow board members.
Yeah, I would like to make a comment. About 6-7 years ago, my grandson, Austin R. Edwards, graduated from the college here at Daytona State. He finished 4th out of 100, and before he walked off the stage and got his diploma and certificate, he was hired by the Sheriff's Department, worked at the land area, made the biggest drug bust in the history of Volusia County, unfortunately. His wife lost her job as a teacher, and they moved to Sparta, Tennessee, and he's taken what he's learned here at Daytona State College to Sparta, and he's doing a great job as a sheriff's deputy. I'm very proud that my grandson entered and pursued a career here at Daytona State College, and I'm very proud of him.
Thank you. Randy, I think I saw your hand.
Yeah, I do. Just, you know, particularly for maybe us newbies here on the board, it looks to me, based on what I remember somewhat about the program, that you've kind of continued to evolve. It's not the same program that it was even just a few short years ago. Is that a fair statement?
That is a fair statement. And in fact, brand new standards are coming out very shortly from CJSTC that will change the curriculum even more. And I think in light of national events that have happened recently. So yes, it is always evolving.
Okay, thank you.
Sarah, did I see your hand?
So does CareerSource help people if they want to go from one career to another, or they're out of work right now? I know they paid for other programs in the past.
You know, I'm not sure. Let's see, do I have Cheryl here? If CareerSource funds this particular program? I'll find out for sure. I know they do the EMT, so I'm thinking they do, but I'll check.
Okay.
Gary?
Yeah. Amy, in terms of, you mentioned the city of Daytona Beach, which I believe now the last two police chiefs came out of our school.
Mm-hmm.
Besides that, what other police departments would you say also run theirs through here in Volusia and Flagler?
I have that. Hold on. So the after the Daytona Beach Police, the next highest ones are DeLand and the Volusia County Beach Patrol.
Okay.
They send, I've got like a 3-year number, and in the last three years, the Beach Patrol sent 20, DeLand 19, Daytona Beach Police 44. And those are the top ones.
Those are the top ones?
Yep.
Okay.
Titusville actually also sends a few a year.
Oh, okay.
Bob?
You know, I think about the unique characteristics of our area and the special events that we hold and the special law enforcement training that needs to be implemented for the special events, the races, and all of the things that we do. And then you add the beach patrol on top of that, and not too many counties have that that additional burden or challenge, and so I just commend you for it. I mean, I think that the record speaks for itself, and I'm very proud of the program, and I think it speaks volumes. But again, we are fairly unique when you look at other jurisdictions in the state of Florida.
Yeah. Anyone else?
I would agree. Thank you very much for the information. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Appreciate that. That was excellent.
Tom, back over to you then.
All righty. So we're gonna shift to a presentation of our cross-country team. And is someone going to kind of get them to come on over? And as they come, I'll just read a little bit of...
They're going to jog over, right?
They're going to jog over. They can do it. They got the endurance.
Dr. Labasso.
Yes.
Is this our first or second year with the cross country?
This is our third year, I believe.
Third year.
Yeah.
In national champions, isn't that something?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Come on down. I'm going to let you stand in front of everybody while I talk about you. Yeah, just try to stagger a little bit. And yeah, there you go. Come on down.
Keep coming over.
Keep on coming. Come close. We won't bite you. Yeah.
It's a big team.
So first of all, I get charged up just because I get to see students in our room, and it's great to see you, but... I'm going to talk a little bit about this historic 2020 cross-country season. As you can imagine, 2020 was started out with a lot of uncertainties. We weren't exactly sure where we're going to have a season, how was the season going to look. And the NJCAA had not announced whether we were going to have a season, but then on August 1st, we... rolled around and we were able to begin to start a season, the NJCAA had decided to go forward. So as you can imagine, with added stress, a lot of COVID testing and questionnaires and social distancing and just general life interruptions, the Falcons here were able to preserve and stay strong throughout the season with, I believe, not one issue in terms of COVID. Once the season began, the Falcons men and women would win both titles at the Florida College System Athletic Association Region 8 Championship, which was held in Tallahassee on October 30th. So again, they finished a season and went up to Tallahassee and became Region 8 champions. Region 8 is a fairly large region. We had a couple runners, Andy Martinez. Andy, where are you here? There you go. Wave your hand. And Harley Bills. Harley would take home the individual race titles, naming them Region 8 Runners of the Year. Our very own head coach, Judy Wilson, and her staff would be named Coach of the Year for both men and women. In accordance with Mid-Florida Conference bylaws, the scores from Region 8 meet were used to determine the winners of the Mid-Florida Conference. So they took that conference title as well. So they brought home quite a bit of hardware on that day. From there, the Falcons went to Fort Dodge, Iowa, to compete in the NJCAA National Cross Country Championship, where the men would finish fourth in the country, and the women eighth. Andy put Daytona State on the national spotlight by leading most of the race and grabbing fourth, fourth place to make an All-American status, along with his teammate Adam Mastrobono. Adam, there you go. All right, who finished 14th? Well done. Coach Wilson again picked up Coach of the Year. Honors for both men and women for the Atlantic region, awarded by the U.S. Track and Cross Country Coaches Association. Both school records were lowered once again, lower scores are better in cross country, and in only the third year of the program, both the men and women again achieved that goal. Both teams were had four individual qualify for academic All-American awards through the NJCAA Cross Country Coaches Association with GPAs of over 3.7. So the Falcons just keep getting better. So I'm going to have Judy kind of help me read off the names, and we do have their medals here, so we would like to give them their well-deserved earned medals. So let's give them a round of applause here first. Coach Judy, if you'd like to say a few words as well, please.
I just want to express our appreciation to Dr. Labasso and to the entire Board of Trustees. This has been a great group to work with, and they are definitely strong ambassadors for Daytona State College. I also want to give a shout out to Will Dunn, Cindy Iafanti, who is here today, Allison Moore, and I would be remiss to forget our sports medicine staff, Trevor Burns, Katie Joe, Waltz, and Braden Jarrett, who spend an exorbitant amount of time testing, checking on questionnaires, and the like. But thank you so much for supporting this, for starting this program, and for supporting it. It's just been tremendous for these kids. This opportunity's been wonderful. Thank you. Okay, for our women's team, Harley Bills Crest. Abby Koschel. Julia Uvali. Caitlin Norfolk. Natalie Abastida. Sarah Mott. And for our men's team, Tyler Gilbert. Jesus Clemente. Tyler Baker. Jadari Ayala. Adam Mastrobono. Adolfo Castro. Andy Martinez. Richard LeBron. Dylan Wilson Beck. And Angel Crino from the women's team. And Dr. Labasso, there's a medal there for you as well.
I think that means he has to run with you guys the next couple practices, though, right? Yes, congrats.
Very good.
Thank you for coming. Thank you.
And there, folks, is kind of what it's kind of all about, having students come, get an education, participate in a sport they love, and they did a really an outstanding job. And again, Coach Judy, thank you.
Thank you.
Just some other updates. Things are picking up in terms of getting out and about a little bit or participating virtually. Was able to speak with the Palm Coast Flagler Regional Chamber. I was on their webinar, updating them on some things that we're doing at the college, particularly talking a little bit about the MedNext project that's going up there and our role in providing healthcare workers for that area. Also participated in Mayor Henry's Equity Initiative, the Education Focus Group, in a virtual meeting. And we did have a federal awards audit with Chair Dr. Howard. And also, we had our reaccreditation visit for our occupational therapy assistant program. And I didn't get the note, but we got a thumb. Yeah. So we got a 10-year reaccreditation. So we're good with a bunch of accolades. So well done. Shout out to the occupational therapy team there. Also had a meeting with our trustee Davis with the assistant superintendent Carmen and had some good discussion, and we'll be following up with some meetings there with the principals to talk further about some other dual enrollment opportunities. And again, I just want to thank you all for your participation in today's rededication. Again, I think it was a fitting event, and I believe the timeline wall really added to when you name a building, the people that were here today would remember it, the students here, but that next cycle, probably wouldn't retain the meaning of the name behind it. So as we talked about it, the idea of a timeline came up to put into the building so that it gives a good historical perspective of not only President Green, but what he presented with Volusia County Community College. So again, thank you for participating, Betty. Special shout out for you to, always lead our way up in nationals to share with them all the good things that we do here at Daytona State. So thank you, Betty, for everything you've done. And that concludes my report.
Great, thank you. Turn it over to Brian and legal items.
Yes, we have three matters for the board. The first being a resolution with attached agreements. The resolution is to ratify the certification, authorize and approve the sport agreement, authorize and approve the ground lease agreement, and the personal services agreement. Also authorizing an invitation to negotiate to be sent out today or tomorrow. The board has seen most of these, but out of abundance of caution, we're bringing them all back to you. Most of these just have changes in the dates. I want to thank Mr. Lubai. He has put a lot of time, and it helps us having a banker on our side. We would recommend approval of the resolution and agreements.
I have a motion.
Motion to approve.
A second.
Second.
A second. Any questions or discussion?
I would just like to recognize the efforts of Tim Norton, Brian, Chris Wainwright, their team, and of course Dr. Labasa, and Ken Arden, our legal counsel in this matter, because we could not have rolled this out last year at a worse time, and it was good that we hit the pause button, and now we're obviously going to be faced, you know, with the market has changed, but also too the market is better, we believe, on the potential financing side of this as well. So I think it's an excellent move for us, and the timing, I think, by the time we get done with this construction, it's going to be excellent.
It's an exciting project. Any other questions or discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed?
Yeah. Or recused.
Motion passes.
The second matter is on page 215A. This is a requirement of the statute. This requires the board to approve a transfer of funds from the foundation to the Housing Corporation. The foundation has approved the transfer of $4,096,764.27. It does require your approval to authorize the transfer of funds. We would recommend your approval.
A motion
to approve.
A motion, a second.
Second.
Any discussions or questions? All those in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion passes.
And the last item is for informational only. This is the Residential Housing Construction Management contract. You saw this last year. We've included the two pages, which were left blank last year. And this is for the guaranteed maximum price on page 216A and 216B. Again, it's informational items, as the Housing Corporation will be entering into that agreement. We recommend approval. Oh, it's informational only, sorry.
Yeah.
At the next board meeting, we will bring you, hopefully, the final resolution, and that would be to approve the debt to be incurred by the Housing Corporation. So that will be at the next, and it will probably be in a March board meeting.
Right, so if I may, so we may need to call a special board meeting just so we keep on track with the calendar there, and I was going to have it there, but it's in all the pieces. If you want to look, the total project cost we have the 12.8 plus the $4 million from the foundation, so it's about a $16.9 million $17 million total project for the dorm. So it's just in different pieces, and just want to make sure that you knew the total price when it's all said and done.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Turn on to the financial update. Ready? That's your introduction song. Finance is always an exciting time on the agenda.
That's got to be Bob Davis.
Kind of like a dance floor here. We
shout out to Tom Wright. That was Senator Tom Wright.
All right, with that introduction, good afternoon. I'll be presenting the financial report for the period ending January 31st, 2021. We're now 7 months through the fiscal year, or 58% through the year. So as we go through the slides, you know, keep that in mind. This first one gives us our operating revenue budget to actual comparison. As you can see, $22.9 million, or 85% of our tuition and fees have been received to date. $23.7 million, or 49% of our state revenues. I'll pause there for a minute. The state revenues always lag behind just a little bit because our lottery funds don't start coming in until February. So this month, we'll start receiving the lottery funds, and moving forward, you'll see that number get boosted up a bit. Moving on down, $5.5 million of our other revenues have been collected. That's 58%. And $2.8 million of the board-approved transfers, 100%. Overall, that's $55 million, or 63% of our operational budget of $87.2 million. Doing the same comparison on the expense side, you'll see that we have $31.2 million expended in personnel. That's 48% of the budget. $14 million, or 68% of our current expenses, which includes encumbrances. The breakout is just below $10 million of actual expenses and $4 million of encumbrances. $949,000, exactly 50% of our capital outlay budget, expended and encumbered. The breakdown, $765,000 of actuals and another $184,000 of encumbrances. In total, total obligations, $46.2 million, or 53% of our overall operational budget. If you take out the encumbrances that are tied to open purchase orders, that leaves actual expenses to date of $42 million, or 48% of the budget. Let me back up. I wanted to make one point. You know, I tend to point this out each meeting, but the 53% on the total obligation and the 48% of the total expense, again, we're 58% through the fiscal year. So those are good indicators that we're doing a good job of controlling our costs. And we've used some of the CARES Act money to help offset a little bit of the Fund 1 operational. So between the two, we're doing good from a revenue and expense standpoint. This is an overview of our fund balance in Fund 1 operating fund. We started the year with a $15.2 million fund balance. Of that 15.2, 5.2 million or 5% is the 5% state required reserve. Another 2.4 million of board designated reserves. $7.3 million of unallocated reserves, and $248,662 of encumbrances. So the net projected fund balance through the date of this report, January 31st, is $18.6 million. Next shows our graph of our comparison of actual revenue received compared to the budget year over year. As you can see, 63% of our revenue has been collected to date. At the same time last year, 65% of the revenue was collected, so we're very consistent with our revenue receipts year over year. This highlights our three-year analysis of tuition and fees. In total, we're at $22.9 million of tuition and fees collected to date. Last year at this time it was $23.8 million. That's about a $900,000 shortfall in total, you know, which isn't bad considering the type of year we're under with COVID. We budgeted 3% down, and if you look at the total tuition and fees as a total line item, it's more like 6 to 7% down. So we're, you know, there's about a 3 or 4% gap between what we budgeted and what we're seeing coming in so far through 7 months. Next slide shows the bar graph of expenditures, budget to actual, year over year. As you can see, in the current year, we've spent 48% of our personnel budget, 68% of our current expense budget, and 50% of our capital outlay budget. Each of those percentages is down from the prior year at this time. Again, yes, spending at a slower level, which during a year like this is a good thing, and the college community should be applauded for really doing a good job of monitoring their budgets and controlling costs. B- Before I get into the Fund 7 capital outlay, I don't have a slide on this, but if you refer to your packet, I believe it's on page 223 and 224. It shows the student tuition and fee monitor, and then the next one is the expense monitor. And what that graph shows, and it sticks out to me also, in the month of November, it looks like there's a spike in both the tuition and fees. And what happened there was just a timing difference. This year we opened up spring registration November 1st. Last year we opened up in late October, so there was a several days difference. So if you look at the prior year, November, the better comparison is looking at the current year, October and November, for tuition and fees. Again, this is in your packet, not up on the projector. I just wanted to clarify that. And on the expense side, you'll also see a spike. It's not really related to the revenue that I just spoke about. 8.9 million compared to the current year, 4.8 million in the month of November. That spike was a transfer that we did last year in November from Fund 1 operating fund to the Fund 7 capital projects fund to help fund deferred maintenance and maintenance repair projects. So that was a middle of the year transfer that was approved by the board at that time. And that's what kind of showed a little bit of a difference there and a spike, like I said, that if you look at it on the graph, it sort of stands out. So I just wanted to clarify in case you came across that in your packets. Moving on to the Fund 7 Capital Projects Fund, this slide kind of gives an overview of the overall funding sources within Fund 7 and the activity that's taken place year to date. So you got your expenses, revenues, and our ending balance as of January 31st. So in summary, we started the year with a Fund 7 fund balance of 41.1 million. We've received to date 3.5 million in cash and appropriations, and we've spent 15.1 million. That includes encumbrances. Again, the breakdown is 14.1 million of actual expenditures and another 985,000 in encumbrances, leaving us a net fund balance per the date of this report of 29.5 million. Of that, 15.7 million is uncommitted, and the remaining 13.8 million is, I said that right, 15.7 million committed, and the remaining 13.8 million uncommitted. Moving on to our active projects in Fund 7, the Capital Projects Fund, we have 10 major projects in progress at the moment. The first couple we've talked about for a while now, they have wrapped up. We're just trying to close out some remaining purchase orders, making sure our invoices have all been paid, so you'll see them come off the list next board meeting, and that's the Deltona Master Plan and the Husseini Hall Building 130 remodel. Next project is the North Parking Lot, A, B, and C. That was a recently approved project with a timeline of May 2021. Brand new project added this time around is the News Journal Center flooring renovation project, previously approved by the board, and also a May completion date. Flagler Palm Coast Building 1 remodel, June of 2021. High voltage upgrade, September 21. IT Cisco phone replacements, June of 2022. And the security cameras, DVR replacements, June of 25. Deltona, we're still holding out for our last bit of funding and to get that project underway. So that's to be determined. And our ERP, mainly consulting, is an ongoing item. We have one project that has made it to the completed projects list for this fiscal year, and that's the demo of building 210 and 340. Good news on that project is that it actually came in under budget by about just over $30,000, so we were able to return a little bit of money to the original funding source that funded that project. And that concludes the financial report for January 31st, 2021, unless there's any questions. Trustee Holmes.
Yes. Thank you for the clarification on 223, 224. When I looked at that, I was just concerned about the difference, but I appreciate your comments.
Yes, ma'am. Like I said, that one sticks. Every time I do that graph, it sticks out to me too, and I have to go back and make sure I remember what the spike was, but it was the transfer for the expense and the timing in the tuition.
It was such a huge difference. I'm saying we're doing such a great job.
Yeah.
Any questions or comments?
Question.
Gary?
Yeah, Marty, earlier you did a comparison year over year for the last 3 years, and I want to make sure I heard you correctly. We're off about 6 or 7% actually this year versus last year, correct?
Yeah, the 900,000 where we're down overall in tuition and fees and other student fees, it's about a $900,000 difference, and that equates to about 6.75%.
How does that compare to the other state colleges? I don't know, Tom, if you know or Marty. But.
You know, I've seen different polls in terms of where enrollment is at other institutions, and I think we're doing better than most. I know for spring particularly, and Eric might be able to speak on it too, but I saw several institutions down about 14%, 15%, and currently we're about 9% down in enrollment. So I think we are, if you were to look at the 28, we're on the better side of terms of enrollment decline.
Other questions? Great, thank you, Marty. One other item, right?
And the next item I have is our ACH and wire transfers greater than $50,000 for the month of January. This is an information item that we always bring before the board. No action needed.
Questions on that? Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Turn it over to IT.
Good afternoon.
Before you, for board consideration, is the ITN for Managed Services of the College PeopleSoft ERP, which encompasses finance, HR payroll, campus solutions, and the Interaction Hub, which is basically our portal. The ITN was issued in October of 2020, and we received 7 responses, good responses. After review, the evaluation committee shortlisted the proposals to 3. And then after narrowing further to 2 and with additional counter offers reviewed, ERP analyst's response was selected based on their experience with campus solutions and cloud services, hosting, inclusion of upgrades, and response and resolution for critical and non-critical incidents. And actually, ERPA is, or ERP analyst, is our current vendor, and they had the best solution as far as cost and their experience with the campus solutions, which is our student system, they were far and above everybody else. And that's really what's most important because that's the biggest part of our system. It is recommended the board approve the selection of ERP analysts and authorize the college to enter into an agreement for a 3-year term of $509,000 per year with the option of 3 additional 1-year terms. The contract will be submitted to the board for final approval in the April 2021 meeting.
Motion to approve.
At this time, I would be open to any questions.
So is this just informational only now, then, and then we would vote?
I believe I need an approval.
You need a motion.
Yeah, motion. Do I have a motion?
Motion.
So moved.
A second. Any questions or discussions? Randy, did you have a question?
No.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Tom, constituent heads?
Okay. All right. We get to see him twice today. We're going to have Hilt Smith come up for SGA.
All right, greetings.
First, we would like to say thank you to everybody, the whole board, from myself and SGA. And I would like to say thank you for today. This is something that I'll remember forever. It's a great memory. Thank you, Dr. Labasso and the whole staff. We currently just sent out our Valentine's Day letters for veterans. That was a success. Every veteran in the veteran home, our local veterans home, received a letter from our students. We're still working with the Student Digital Experience Committee, working with a survey, trying to come up with a survey for the digital app, the mobile app, and the schedule builder. We're trying to come up with ideas and incorporate the students. We also just had our FSIGA legislative conference. It was virtual, February 9th through the 12th. We're working on a club banquet. Just said before is entitled, Why Is This in My Closet? So we will keep the theme accessible and affordable for all students. So they can just go in their closet and pick something from before, like a prom dress or something like that. Yeah, it's gonna be nice. So, and we're also, since we did get the CARES Act funding, we're trying to come up with a platform for social media to get it out to all the students. So we will be working with you all on that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions for Hilton?
Thank you.
Great job. All right, and then Dr. Ellert for the Administrative Council.
Good afternoon. The Administrative Council met at the beginning of this month. And first, we talked about our scholarship fund, which currently has a balance of $8,515.80. And for the current academic year, we've awarded $3,165 to 5 students. We also finalized our process for optional membership dues, so hopefully we'll have money in that fund soon. We discussed the SAC-COC 10-year reaffirmation, which, of course, all of you have heard a lot about as well, and have been involved with policy revisions. We found members for our nominating committee, and we also discussed diversity and inclusion at Daytona State College. And our next meeting is at the end of March. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And representing Career Employees Association is Samantha Tatum, but she has given me a report to read, which I will do. The CEA has their Spring Student Award going on until February 26th, and they will notify recipients by March 12th of their award. The CEA is looking for 4 leaders to take on the roles of CEA president, vice president, secretary, and treasurer. I'm fogging up here. If anyone is interested in these leadership roles, they should contact Samantha Tatum at the CEA's communications liaison. Thank you and have a great day. And the next report is from Dr. Levon Tal for Faculty Senate, and he's also submitted a report for me to read. The Faculty Senate would like to recognize the following faculty members as achieving emeritus faculty status after a vote by the Faculty Senate and approval of Daytona State College's senior executive staff. This designation is in recognition of the faculty members' long record of service and excellence in teaching. The newest emeritus faculty members are Alice Godby, Elena Jarvis, Kevin Jordan, Kathleen Lazarus, Joanne Pinkston McDuffie, and Richard Rogers. And for professional counsel is Billy Joe Dunaway here. She's here? Oh, great. Come on up, Billy Joe.
At the end of January, professional council had more than 50 members participate in a virtual meeting, and we took a virtual tour for the Center for Women and Men, which was given by our own Zoe Messenger and Rebecca Collins. They informed us about the services that they offer to our students, and we got to see their beautifully remodeled space. And if you haven't been there, you should take a minute to check that out. We talked about the needs of the center and discussed how, as professionals, we could continue to support the center with donations. An idea was brought forth by our members to start, to recognize professionals within us and their contributions to the college. So we're looking into how we can do this and look forward to celebrating those professionals among us. Our next meeting is next Friday, the 26th at 10 a.m., and we plan to discuss retirement options offered by the college, as well as updates to our social media outlets. Thank you.
Thank you,
Billy Joe. That concludes the constituent head reports.
Great. Thank you, Tom. I just have two real brief comments. I know we've been here for an exciting day, and I wanted to say, wow, what great presentations today, Betty. I really enjoyed your comments, and Hilton, and Tom, and Julene. It was great comments all around, and I think that, you know, as you said, Tom, fitting to remember the legacy behind, you know, that they had as part of this college. So, well done. And then the other one, again, I just love to keep an eye on all the great things coming out of the college. And the one that really caught my eye recently is the online rankings for U.S. News and World Report. Online education, I think right now lots of colleges and universities are trying it. And lots of colleges and universities are finding out it's not as easy as it sounds. If you want to do it right, it takes a lot of time and investment and dedication to it. And you know, if you think about it, the only one in the top 50 that's not a university, Daytona State College, the top-ranked state college in Florida, and 9 years now, I think, in the national rankings, that's an amazing testament. So kudos to the college and everybody, Amy, all your staff that's involved in that. It's a great kudo and one that's nice to keep getting. So thank you.
Thank you.
And with that, we will go around the room, and we'll start with Sarah down here this time. How about?
I thought today was a great turnout and a great event. Betty did excellent, and so did you guys. It's great seeing so much of the community here. Congratulations to the cross country team. Played sports in high school, didn't have the ambition to do it in college, but it's great to see so many young kids in a new program achieve what they've achieved. Kudos to the coach as well, because that looked like some good recruiting that took place. I'm really excited about the housing. I think this is a huge step for a college, especially when you see so many people moving to the state of Florida right now. It's going to be a great way to recruit out of state, which also is a higher tuition cost, and it gives athletes another chance. So I'm just excited to see that all of this is finally coming to fruition after we made it through COVID.
Great, thank you. Randy?
Just a couple comments. I appreciate these building dedications because it allows me to get familiar with the campus. So we should continue to do those things and or maybe have an orientation, but I really do. I think it was a great event. I love it. I love learning more about the history of the college, and you know, you can't, you would be just goofy not to recognize how the passion and the support from the community today, that was just tremendous. And that's my next comment. You know, it's been a year and a half, I think, since we've been doing this. I've lost track of time with COVID. You know, you just don't know where the line is. But you know, I'm out in the community. And one of the things that I really appreciate about this organization, this college, is the passion that the community has for it, the overwhelming support our community has for the organization. How many different people have attended? And it's, you know, it doesn't do that by itself. It accomplishes that by these great people that are around here. And I just, again, I know I say it a lot, but I'm truly amazed at the job that's done here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Randy. Bob?
You know, very few things really get me excited. If the Mets win the World Series, that excites me. But Frank Mercer called me this week from the business division and really, really, really has me excited. And Tom, if you want to help me with it, the school got a grant for, I believe it was $1.2 million, slim grant, and they decided that they would work with the hospitality industry. And what it's going to entail is that HVAC and quality are going to be the courses. And for any employees of hospitality that are presently employed, on furlough, or have been unemployed, they will come to Daytona State College. We're going to work the program out March the 3rd and get a free education from the grant. I mean, that's as good as the Mets winning. It's amazing that we will be able to afford people in our community that have been furloughed out or want to advance their career or want to go further and with education. And I'm so proud that Frank and the business school chose my industry that is so needed. And for you, President Tom, thank you. And if you want to add anything, I mean, I'm still rolling in it, so I can't really comprehend all of it.
Yeah, it's that rapid credentialing grant that we put a press release on. So it's timely, and as we know, especially in the hospitality industry where there's been, you know, many layoffs and furloughs. So it's short-term credential. You can become an HVAC technician. Firefighter is one. I'll look at AMIC.
Quality.
EMT. CNC machining, and what was the other one? Manufacturing. Lead manufacturing certification. So,
amazing.
Some really, great opportunities short term, and those industries are still, for the most part, doing well, so that they can, get back into the job market. So,
thank you.
Yep.
Hey, Betty.
Okay. Today was a wonderful day. It was my honor to represent the board. I think I learned about Bush County School about 4 or 5 years ago at a trustee conference up in Tallahassee. Was totally unaware of its existence. And as you said, it was great to see the community out. And it meant so much for the community to see that we don't just talk it. We demonstrate and believe it. When we talk about diversity and equity being important, we demonstrate it. And whoever did, the timeline was wonderful. I think that has a lasting memory of the people to see exactly what really has happen, and you could have a better understanding if you weren't familiar with the college. And today with the cross country, talking about we have so many championships, Tom. Do we have a place in our main building where we maybe highlight maybe a month or two all the various championships and students who brought those championships to our college?
So we do in the Lemron Athletic Center. There's trophy cases and a wall as well that they're going to be, some permanent recognition. But when you say main building, I'm guessing maybe the student center. I guess we can look at we do have those kiosks where we can certainly give them some congratulatory recognition. So
yeah, it would just be nice for a month or 2 months.
Sure. That's a great idea.
To be recognizing our students who are bringing all these awards to our college.
Yeah, no, thank you for that suggestion.
Why don't you put it where we lost the trophy to Bethune-Cookman?
I have an empty spot on my shelf right now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Betty. Gary?
Yeah, just I'll throw the trophy from one boat to another.
Yeah.
Like some Super Bowl champion did here recently. But a few comments. One, this morning opened up the Palm Coast Observer, and there was a great article about our renovations that are going on up in at the Palm Coast campus, and almost a full-page article around that. So if you haven't had a chance to read that yet, encourage everybody to check that out. Secondly, when you look at the number of projects that we have going on, I just want to, again, shout out to Chris Wainwright and his team. The kudos to them. We, just as an example, they were working till 8 o'clock last night on getting this GMP all pulled together on the housing, and that enabled our housing court board to meet this morning and get this thing, keep this thing moving along. So our timing remains good. While interest rates have come up a little bit, they're at least still low, definitely near historical lows. So that part's excellent. And finally, I know we talk about this almost every meeting, but you know, Tom, you and your team, the leadership through COVID just continues to be remarkable. And I just want to say thank you. And it's just, when you look at all the things that you got to put in place at multiple campuses, it's just amazing. And the amount of detail that I know that you look at with that. So I just want to say thank you.
Thank you. Great, thank you, Bob.
So I reiterate everything else that's been said already, but also want to thank President Labasso and Dr. Locklear for the presentation on the Law Enforcement Academy. You know, law enforcement ain't sexy, but it's so important, and to see the level of excellence that comes out of this college and contributes generation to generation in our community and makes it different. It makes it exceptional, and it's the mark of excellence that this college puts on everything else that it does. And it is so vital right now, and what we need to do in recognizing our law enforcement community, but really take a lot of pride in what we're offering here at Daytona State College, so kudos.
Yeah. Well said. Marianne?
Yes, and I think that was very beneficial for all of us to, when we know more deeply about our big programs like that, and that's such an important one. It offers so much to our community, and I'm so thankful we have it and that it is such a stellar program. Also, thank you for that lovely dedication today. That was perfect. Thank you, Betty, for speaking. You honored us greatly by doing so. So happy that even though times are a little bit weird right now, we're moving ahead in things. That residential housing piece is, I think it's going to be one of those things that we're going to say, gee, too bad we didn't make it twice as big. You know, I think it's going to be well received. I think it's going to be utilized. I think, too, when you have your students on campus, they're going to utilize the things we already have in place here that are going to help them be successful. We've got all kinds of labs and learning centers and other resources here on campus, and instead of, oh, class is over and they head on home, what have you, this is home. And they have all of those resources that are staring at them. So I think that's going to be beneficial for all of those kids that stay. And that was lovely bringing in the cross-country team. I thought that was really neat. And I'm very proud of my cross-country T-shirt. If you recall, you gave those out when you started the team. And I want you to know I wore it while walking around my neighborhood not that long ago. And a neighbor said to me, I didn't know you were on the cross-country team. Okay, what's the laughter for? No, they really did say that. And I said, no. It's just, you know, they knew I was on the board, but they thought for some reason I was also running cross country. Like, I watch it, but that's as close as I get. Anyway, thank you very much. Great meeting.
Thank you, Marianne. And Lloyd?
And the last will be the first. You know, the dedication today was fantastic. It really started the flow of everything. And then to bring in the cross country team in their third year to win all these medals, you're doing things to you and your staff. It is an honor and a privilege for me to sit on this board and watch you all do the things that you do. You're just fantastic. And I'm so proud of this college, and I know it's going in the right direction. Thanks a lot, Dr. Labasso, to you, your staff, and your faculty.
Thank you, Lloyd. A perfect ending, so. Thanks, everyone, for attending today. And with that, we'll adjourn the meeting.
Thank you.